It is the Fan Morning Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm J.D. Bunkus. Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar. Good morning,
Hump
everybody.
Day.
I got a confession. Thought it was Thursday until he said that. Thursday.
You know when it's Baby Friday.
I know, but that was kind of a kick in the stomach. You know, you guys started the day with me great because you told me that Felix Auger-Aliassime is up 2-0 on, I think it's Denis Medvedev. I could be wrong.
Sure.
Daniil Medvedev.
I just go by his last name.
Here's how I know him from betting apps. D. Medvedev.
Yeah, exactly.
they don't put the full name. But yes, at the Australian Open. So the Canadian kid is now on all of our secondary screens, and we are going to be tracking that this morning. So you woke me up, and that was nice news, and now you ruined the... It's Wednesday. You're like, thanks. You just gave me a... You basically just made an extra day of the week for me, Ailish. You know? Like, you just did that. That's reality.
I am in control of the calendars and the dates of the world.
But perception is reality. So, like, what? It's like the... Remember when we told you what Schrodinger's cat was?
Yes.
Right. And you basically just, you know, you decided the fate by opening the box. You know, like, you just opened the box for me and you showed me the dead cat inside. And that dead cat was that it's Wednesday. I know, that's a tough image for you after you spent all morning talking to us about your cat. Sorry. Sorry for that one.
It's okay.
You're sad. Blake's watching tennis. He's already checked out this. So the Raptors win last night, kind of shockingly, because we get a text from Blake Murphy an hour or so before the game about Fred VanVleet's injury. And then we go, okay, well, Fred's out. That's a bummer. And then Scotty Barnes. Scotty Barnes is hurt. And this hasn't... Well, I'll put it this way. We thought maybe this team had absolutely no depth. And the way Nick Nurse had been playing his rotations, it was as though the Toronto Raptors might have to forfeit. They might have to go out to center court and pull a Coach Taylor into season 4 of Friday Night Lights. You would understand this reference, Ailish, and say, you know what? We don't have enough players. We don't have enough players. And then call the game, Chuck, or whatever that referee's name is. And the Raptors were not going to be able to play. Oh, they were able to play a basketball game. Oh, all of a sudden, the other Raptors players, even without Blake Murphy's favorite player, Justin Champagne, getting ejected from the game, the Raptors still found a way to drub an opponent that they're neck and neck with in the standings and was mostly healthy. And so let's just start with this. Blake, Nick Nurse, maybe play some more guys? Is he going to play more guys? Is this a bad look for Nick Nurse? Is a win a bad look for this coach?
Yeah, they should have lost. It would have been better.
Yeah, he should have. No. You should have tagged him.
For anyone who didn't see the game, don't let the 125-113 final fool you. It was not that close. That was a little bit of Charlotte nudging the score down at the finish line. But yeah, this looked bad for a while. No Gordon Hayward on the Hornets side, but no Scotty Barnes, no Fred VanVleet. And then Justin Champagne, who was ostensibly the sixth man in this game, got tossed after 4 minutes in the softest double ejection of all time with PJ Washington, arguing over who's actually 6'6" and who's not. Two short guys lying about their heights. But it was like, at that point in time, you could have made the joke, and people were making the joke, that, oh, they're only going to play their starting five at that point. They started Gary Trent, OG Anunoby, Pascal Siakam, Chris Boucher, Precious Achiuwa. So Gary Trent and 4 guys who are 6'8" or 6'9". It's the lineup that we've seen a lot of, just even more so because there's no Fred. But that wasn't the way it played out. And, you know, we talked about very, very briefly yesterday, and I talked about it on the Raptors show with William Liu, about how Yuta Watanabe, Malachi Flynn, and Delano Banton had gone down to the 905 the night prior, and just to shake a little rust off, just to get some run in. Banton's been up and down a little bit more, but Watanabe and Flynn, it was just like, hey, we haven't played in forever. All three of those guys looked like back-end rotation pieces. I'm not saying Malachi Flynn is a 26-minute-a-game guy now, but in those 26 minutes, he certainly looked like a guy who could be giving you 8 minutes a game. And DeLon Bain maybe isn't a 17-minute a game guy, but he looked like a guy who can be giving you 12 minutes a game off the bench.
Yeah, it was good to see Malachi kind of back in the mix, even though it had to be amplified because Delano got a couple of fouls early on. But it was good to see them get an opportunity. I know we talked about Malachi's angry Flynn, his angry dad on Facebook.
He is an angry Flynn, you're right.
Talked about his dad the other day being upset that he isn't getting any time. But I really thought that the timeline of them getting down there, getting some touches, getting confidence back was almost perfectly scripted for them to come back and have to play big minutes. So I think that was one of the biggest takeaways for me was like, oh, it was nice to see other people do well in that position. Is that something that we will see moving forward? It kind of gave me that little bit of an edge into thinking of how this moves forward, what's next for the Raptors if Fred's out for more than one game.
More than seven guys on the team? Oh, my God.
I thought they were going to put Will Liu and Alex Wong in, who are there in the stands.
No, you can't put Will Liu in because he's instant foul trouble. And they were already having a lot of trouble with fouls early in that game.
So I'll be honest, and this is not going to be something that Raptors fans want to hear after a win like that, but I thought the Charlotte Hornets were a little asleep at the wheel to start the game.
Oh, yeah.
And they really didn't adjust very well to the no fans. That it felt very much like a glorified scrimmage to me. Maybe that was me superimposing my thoughts of seeing an empty arena, but I've watched the Raptors play in empty arenas. I'm a little bit more familiar with it. It doesn't feel as hockey to me night in, night out. And that was just a spot where Charlotte, they never really found their footing. And then the one time in the game where they had a little bit of a pushback, which was in the third quarter, the Raptors played their best basketball a few minutes later and really put the game away. So there is a part of this where I don't want to blow it out of proportion, right? I don't want to say that, wow, this was them playing a locked-in, really quality playoff team, and Malachi Flynn, Delano Banton, and Yuta Watanabe all look good. But here's what I will say. Those guys look like NBA players, like Blake said. They just look like guys that are capable of giving you a couple of minutes. And Nick Nurse, the part of this that is making him look bad in this spot, which I do think he looks bad, by the way, is that the reason the other two guys are not playing is because they're hurt. They weren't sick. They weren't missing it for personal reasons. They didn't have COVID-19. They're missing it because probably wear and tear from a season. We've been saying this for weeks. Fred has been basically as close as it can get to telling the media that he's tired. Like, the guy is under 6 feet tall, and they're asking him to play more minutes than anybody in the NBA. It's not sustainable. It's not smart. Fred has not been an NBA Iron Man. He is someone who has dealt with injuries throughout his career. He's also not 22 years old. So asking Fred to do this in a season where, I'm sorry, the Raptors are not going to an NBA championship has been kind of asinine. And then the fact that the rookie, another guy who last year in college played like no minutes, and this year is basically being asked to play every minute of every single game, both those guys being on the bench as other players flourished, the combination of those two things together was a bit eye-opening to say, hey, if you had your doubts about whether or not Nick Nurse was going to be a great coach during a developmental year, I think that you had some of those fears realized a little bit yesterday.
So, to your Scotty Barnes point, he played 600 minutes at Florida State last year. He's at 1,300 so far this year. We talked about, I think it was in something to chew on yesterday, where four of the top 14 players in the league in minutes per game are Toronto Raptors. And no matter what the qualifications are around sports science and rest and stuff like that, that's such an extreme number for a lot of reasons. It's an extreme number for workload. It's an extreme number for freezing out your bench. It's an extreme number for, can we project this team forward when they're playing playoff-style basketball and everyone else is playing regular season basketball? So my hope would be, first of all, that Fred's fine. Scotty Barnes' wrist swelling seemed like a last-minute thing and you know, one of those cases where like he probably took a fall that we didn't quite notice in real time and it was just a little sore, and so why not be cautious? But the league's minutes leader having a sore knee randomly is not the best thing, especially like, you think Fred VanVleet wanted to sit that out? That guy's in the middle of an all-star push. This is like the coaches have to start submitting their ballots Friday. I don't think he wants to miss these games, especially a winnable game against an Eastern Conference, not rival, but a team in their tier. So Yeah, I'm with you, JD. I think yesterday or Monday, I've lost track of days, but it's about the most fired up I've been about these minutes and Nick Nurse's usage and tight rotation and stuff. And I get why. I understand every micro decision, right? Like, you're in a close game and it's late in the third quarter. Do you want to go to Svi Mihailuk or Delano Banton, or do you want to trust your guys a little bit more, ride them just a little bit longer? Those individual decisions are justifiable, but then you zoom out and you can't make that same individual decision every time, because that's how you end up with guys hurt and guys worn down. And I think the biggest thing is just, look, Utah and Delano and Justin Champagne, and I think it'll be up and down, but Malachi Flynn, those are all guys who on other teams would be playing bench minutes. Like, like Ish Smith played 8 minutes for the Hornets last night, and I love Ish Smith, like, for the role he's carved out for himself in his career, and he's you know, the king of the floater and stuff like that. He should not be playing rotation minutes on, like, in a vacuum on a young team, but they're going to play their bench guys because they're not going to run a six-man rotation, because it's not the championship yet. It's not the playoffs yet. So my hope would be that this nudges Nick Nurse in a deeper direction, playing 3 games in 4 nights here. Even if you get Fred and Barnes back tonight, I would hope that some of those peripheral guys, at least Yuta Watanabe and Delano Banton, are still in the mix.
Is he the type of guy that's going to learn from that? I think he's been pretty steadfast on the way he wants to coach all season. He hasn't really taken into account a lot of these things, and I feel like we've had this conversation many times, being like, it would be great if he did this, but I feel like sometimes he's a bit stubborn. Like, do you think that he has the opportunity to learn from this, or he's just going to be like, oh yeah, they played great, like post-game media, oh, so great to see these guys, but tomorrow we're back to the same thing?
My concern would be that it goes the opposite direction of what we're hoping, and it almost empowers him, where it's like, yeah, these guys can sit on the bench and our player development staff is good enough that we can call on them for 20 minutes and they're fine. Mm-hmm. I don't know that that'll be the case. He's been while he has been, you know, sticky at times in his strategies, mm-hmm. or his rotations, he's also a guy who has tended to ride the hot hand, where, you know, Justin Champagne had a couple good performances and then he's the seventh man for a little while. We saw that with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson at times, Stanley Johnson at times, Matt Thomas at times, who, by the way, I had a weird dream that I was playing pickup basketball and Matt Thomas was on my team. Very odd. No, of course not.
Oh,
I was feeling very negative as I went to bed because my wake and rake pick for the second game in a row got absolutely stomped. So I was a little anxious heading to bed. Anyway, Nick Nurse has shown you have a good game, you get the stick for a little bit, you get the next chance up. And I thought,
unless you're Malachi Flynn.
But, I mean, we'll see. Malachi Flynn hadn't had a good game in a while. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to say even that, like, he wasn't getting consecutive opportunities, because you'd have to go back to, I think, the Sacramento game, which was a total blowout for the last time you watched. And we're like, oh, yeah, he played well. Maybe the Golden State game where he had a brief cameo there. And he hadn't been good with the 905 really either, whereas Yuta and Banton were great.
Listen,
so I don't know. I think
like
it moves
this
in the direction.
I'm sure that a lot of the Malachi Flynn thing is his play. I'm not suggesting by any stretch of the imagination that this guy's some NBA all-star in waiting. But show me the organizations that give up on first-round picks the way that the Raptors have given up, mm-hmm. on their first-round pick this quickly to this degree, and where it has become acrimonious. Like, this is what happens with the Sacramento Kings, not the Toronto Raptors. Like, this is a Marvin Bagley Jr. situation that they have created for themselves because they don't play their essentially rookie. Like, this guy didn't – he got drafted in a year where the team is in Miami, and they're playing a weird COVID schedule, and now he can't get a minute to save his life on a team that desperately needs his exact skill set and at his exact position. It last night felt outrageous to me, and it felt personal, I won't lie. And maybe it's just because we had just heard about the angry Flynn, as Ailish put it, in Malachi's father. But that's stupid. Malachi Flynn is an NBA player. Like, I'm sorry. He is someone that clearly has an NBA skill set. He can shoot the ball. He can obviously handle it. He's clearly got a little bit of a mid-range game, and he's clever. He's a clever scorer. And you know why guys like that have bad games? Is because they come off the bench and they know that they might get 5 minutes, and that if they make one mistake, their coach is waiting. Like, do you guys like working for someone that's waiting for you to fail, for you to make one mistake before they jump down your throat and remind you of the fact that you are a failure and then put, like, of course not. That's a toxic work environment for Malachi Flynn. It's awful. It really is awful. So maybe there's some behind the scenes stuff that we don't see. Maybe there's some stuff with Malachi where the organization has told him very clearly, hey, you've got to do this, and he just has not followed through on any of it. I'm not saying that he's blameless in this. Clearly, there is something on his end that has created this for him. But last night, I watched a guy play basketball that should be getting minutes for a team that's playing six guys, period. I saw a guy that should be getting minutes behind Fred VanVleet, the most taxed player in the NBA, who's trying to head in for an all-star bid for 6 to 8 minutes a game, who should have a little bit of free reign on offense, who they should be saying, you know what, try to play a pick and pop with Pascal Siakam. This actually looks kind of like it works. That actually looked like something where the two of you guys might play well with each other. And so that's what I'm talking about with the developmental stuff, is there are a couple things that I fear. Blake just said it. One is Nurse is going to do everything in his power to win. And what does it look like if he doesn't have NBA caliber every night in, night out rotation players that he can lean on, and he does have that in a starting group? Is he going to continue to do that? No coach does that. People compare Nick Nurse to Greg Popovich, which is like one of the most, I'm sorry, like Coach David Thorpe has said it on our show. It's insane. Like, it's insane calling this guy Popovich at this point of his career. And sometimes in Toronto, we treat him this way. Like, he's this infallible deity that we should just kind of kiss the feet of and never really criticize. I'm sorry. But Nick Nurse this year, the rotations have been an issue. And we can play the 18 different starting rotations all we want, or starting lineups that we want. There have obviously been some reasons for the Raptors being in the position they're in. But treating every night like a playoff game, basically putting your first round pick from last year into a place where everybody's already writing off that they're ever going to be a future part of the team, having guys like Delano Banton night in, night out, just rotting away on the bench, having Yuta Watanabe have one bad game and then you can't see him for until he plays another Japanese player and he gets 5 minutes. It's like, some of this stuff is not normal. This isn't normal basketball, normal sports stuff. It's weird, and it seems petty, and it seems not great. And yesterday was just an example of that, where I was like, you know what? Good for these guys going out there and sort of sticking it to this guy. And I hope that they continue to do it. I hope that they go play Chicago tonight and Malachi Flynn strings two games together and Delano Banton has another 10 minutes of just quality play, where we saw that early Delano Banton, where he's going downhill and he can score. So I don't know. I just saw capable NBA players last night. I didn't see guys where I thought, oh boy, this is just, these guys are in way over their head. So
it's not It's not as if that should be surprising either, right? Like, I haven't thought Malachi Flynn's played super well in his NBA minutes this year, but that's a guy I was high on last year. I thought he looked good. He looked good defensively. Right. I thought he looked good as a pick and roll orchestrator. I thought he had a strong, you know, summer league showing and summer overall. You know, Banton was a bit of a surprise, but he has a very obvious identity that he plays with that suits some of the bench bigs, where it's just like, hey, we're going to be a little chaotic and we're going to be improvisational, but that's because we're long and we can defend and none of us can create in the half court. So we got to roll this way. Banton adding a 3-point shot has been a nice subplot to his 905 time too. And Yuta is just like Yuta's rotation player. Like Nick Nurse has said that himself. So I'm with you. I thought, you know, the term that I've used a lot for these short rotations is short-sighted, and short-sighted for injury maintenance, short-sighted for cumulative fatigue, short-sighted for, hey, you're going to need to call on these guys eventually. Huge testament to the player development assistant coaches, the 905, and these guys that, after not playing NBA minutes for quite a stretch of time, they're ready to come in and contribute. But I don't think you rely on that. I think you want to keep these guys in the mix. And, like, sure, there could be 905 assignments ahead. The 905 play 10 of 11 at home right now. Whenever the Raptors aren't on the road, these guys should be going down. You could play 30 minutes for the 905 one night and 20 for the Raptors the next. There's almost no cumulative wear and tear on these guys at this point. So, yeah, I'm with you, JD. I'm with you, Ailish. This is something we've all been asking for a little bit more of, even when things were going well, even when they were winning. Like, they tear off that six-game win streak, and we're like, sure, but can you do that for 82 games with only six guys, six and a half, seven guys? So, yeah, start using your guys. Yeah. Like, you also need to find out, again, like you said, JD, they're not winning a championship this year. You need to find out if Malachi Flynn is a guy you're willing to give up on, or if you can still develop him into a backup point guard. You need to see Yuta's a free agent this year. You need to see if he's a guy you want to keep around, and that fits your bench identity. You know, Banton's got a little bit more runway as a rookie, but it's still, these are decisions you have to make. And, you know, we know who Svi Mykhailiuk is. We have a good idea who Isaac Bonga is. And we certainly know who the top seven or eight rotation guys are at this point because they've played endless minutes. So, yeah, there are a lot of reasons to play some of your kind of second-tier fringy guys, and I really hope we see it more.
I it couldn't be said any better. And maybe this is something where, again, I see a situation where the Raptors are a young team, and I don't think that Malachi Flynn is going to play great every night. I don't think Banton is going to play great every night. I think that those guys are going to have more games than not where you have growing pain moments where you go, oof, that's just a bad turnover or that's a bad defensive lapse. But yes, there is still fact-finding stuff to be found out, and it's just, it's a bad trend for me that you would, yeah, have rotations like that and that you would create environments like that. I got to say, before we move off of Raptors, because I want to keep the emotional train going here, when Gary Trent Jr. is on fire, it's like you'd think that he is the second coming of Michael Jordan. Like, that guy could not miss last night. It was incredible watching him play. And I'm not talking about just, you know, this is a guy who's supposed to be wide open threes or whatever, right? And that's the shot we want him to take. This guy, late in the clock, long twos, late in the clock, tough shots. The Hornets at one point last night threw a double team at him, and he drew a foul on a three-point shot where I go, that's the treatment, like, Luka Doncic gets like defending somebody multiple feet behind the 3-point line and then still fouling him because you're so afraid of this guy scoring. So I just got to say, what a game for Gary Trent.
Maybe he should keep the headband.
Yeah, I don't know. I just thought that yesterday he looked amazing, and there's just a level of, oh my God, this guy, the confidence in his scoring. Last night it was out of this world. Last night was an out of this world experience for Gary Trent Jr. It was like, I'd love to see the shot chart, actually. I didn't see it, but I'd love to see the shot chart. And you know how baseball has that stat, Blake, of, you know, catch, what's it called? Like catch percentage, where they go like, yeah, hey, to make a catch on this play. And I always kind of think it's BS and it doesn't involve all the right variables. But yeah, I would like to see the like quote unquote catch percentage or like scoring percentage on what these plays are, this situation, this late in the clock, this defensive coverage. Because I feel like Gary Trent Jr. just pitched like a perfect game from an analytics scoring standpoint of degree of difficulty. Like that might have been one of the greatest, like, weirdly off-night scoring performances I've seen in a while. It was beautiful. Like, it was breathtaking what he was doing.
Yeah, he was 5 of 8 on non-paint twos.
Yeah, it was just, so it was nice. He was hot.
I don't have, like, I can't isolate it, you know, on short notice enough for, like, pull-ups and defenses and stuff. But yeah, 5 of 8 on non-paint twos. Gary is, like, Ailish, I don't, you're the coordinator here, so you have to agree. Or you have to agree or tell me if I'm wrong, but Gary Trent Jr. is the most vibes-based player probably in Raptors history. So, like, he is a guy, I'm not a huge believer in, like, hot hand or guys feeling or whatever. When Gary Trent is feeling it, Gary Trent is feeling
it.
And
you can tell. It's in his it's in his body, it's in his face, it's in his swag. You know, he's 100% a vibes guy.
So, speaking of vibes, bad vibes. For me, anyways, this morning. Last night, I was paying attention to Raptors. I was actually doing some like other out-of-market NBA watching. And maybe this just speaks to where I was at mentally. Is Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens not getting into the Baseball Hall of Fame is a 10-year-old story now, right? So they're off the ballot. They're done. It's been 10 years. And I wasn't really expecting anything different. And last night, it just sort of hit me, you know? Last night, the full weight of it really hit me, that the arguably the greatest baseball player in the history of the sport is not going to go into the Hall of Fame. And I saw one writer, and I'll admit that it was a local writer. I read their justification for not voting for Barry Bonds, and I just couldn't do it. And I sat there with that, and it made me angry. And I sat there with it for a while. And I tweeted this last night pretty late because I couldn't get to bed, honest to God. I thought, it is a far more heinous act to keep out Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens for steroid use than it is to take the steroids. And these baseball writers, and I'll say this about this, like sports writers do this in general. There is a piousness to this at times, and especially now in COVID, where you just, who asked you guys to be the morality police of sports? Who asked you guys to be the defenders of the game? And in their attempt to be these gatekeepers of morality and justice and whatever the hell else they're trying to do here, they have completely discredited the Hall of Fame. David Ortiz went into the Hall of Fame yesterday, and my only thought was, who cares? Who cares that you're walking into this shallow hall that is determined by a weird boys club of how are you in this position? How did you get this vote? How do you think that you as a baseball writer have the right to keep Barry Bonds out of a Hall of Fame? Like, who are you? Who are you people? Barry Bonds is Barry freaking Bonds, and you just kept him out of a baseball museum because why? Because you don't think that parents can have a conversation with their kids about the nuances of Barry Bonds? Who are you? Who are you people? And I just, it drove me insane, and I couldn't sleep last night. I couldn't sleep over Barry Bonds. I couldn't believe it. But it's just like, you ruined the baseball museum. It's a freaking baseball museum, you nerds. Way to ruin it.
I don't understand. I agree 100% with everything you're saying, JD. I don't understand why they can't have a plaque and say, yes, this is something that, you know, has been a controversial topic, yet he is the greatest player. So we are inducting him, and you can decide if you want to go and visit or not. He does 100%, 1,000,000,000% should be in there. And it is disappointing. Like, imagine the NHL not having the greatest goal scorer of all time because he did steroids. Like, you have to acknowledge that person existed. Everybody took steroids in that era. So even David Ortiz, didn't he get test positive for steroids? So what are we doing here? I don't get
it. Rob Manfred bent over in 2016 to be like, well, you can't really count that. It was an anonymous survey before we introduced the drug policy in 2004. Well, guess what? Barry Bonds never tested positive through the, like, he was never suspended by Major League Baseball's PED policy.
They created so many millions of baseball fans. They should be celebrating these guys' careers. And just because maybe they weren't nice to the media, or maybe they didn't have great relationship with these writers, doesn't mean that you can't accept them into the Hall of Fame. Like, there's too much power on these guys' shoulders. Just David Ortiz was a wonderful person. We all know that. Larger than life. Great personality. He treated people with respect. That doesn't make him deserve it more than somebody else just because he was nice. Like, take your own pride out of this.
It's not the Hall of Good Guys.
Nor is it the Hall of Baseball Writers. Like, sure, some writers get in, but you are not, it's not about you. And this is similar to the discussion we had about Aaron Rodgers, the guy who said he wouldn't vote for Aaron Rodgers for MVP. Mm-hmm. And obviously that one is, like, fresher, and you know, we all enjoyed piling on Rodgers a little bit after that loss. But
I'm going to pile on Rodgers today on my Instagram, so please me following, because there's a very harsh Aaron Rodgers pile on coming. Sorry.
At JD Bunkus on Instagram. So it's not about you, first of all, as sports writers. I think in 2014, for anyone who doesn't know this, the National Baseball Hall of Fame unilaterally decided that the eligibility window for guys on ballots would shrink from 15 years to 10 years. There was no grandfathering clause, so those guys who had already been on the ballot a couple years just lost 5 years off the end of it, or however many years, depending on how they've been on. That is absolutely accepted as something the National Baseball Hall of Fame did because of Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. The BBWAA, as much as, you know, they can be nerds and they didn't vote them in, that wasn't their decision. That was the National Baseball Hall of Fame being like, nope, we're going to change the eligibility rules because we know this is going to put a crunch in, and we trust that there are enough old curmudgeonly guys that'll vote against Barry Bonds. Or the most asinine thing, so you can, if you're a voter, you can submit an empty ballot, which is, I'm not voting for anyone, or you can abstain, which is, my ballot doesn't count at all. And there were enough people that voted empty ballots instead of abstaining that it changed the accounting of this, because it counts as a zero vote instead of we're not counting this ballot. So instead of 8 out of 10, it becomes 8 out of 9. So that part is nonsense. The making it about the baseball writers and the morality judgments is nonsense. There are lots of bad guys in the Baseball Hall of Fame. There are lots of guys who, based on the moments in which they played skirted the rules or did things that would have been frowned on at the time or were later frowned on. There are a bunch of guys in the Hall of Fame who have great stats because black players weren't allowed in baseball for a really long time. Guess what the Baseball Hall of Fame's mission statement is? Preserving history, honoring excellence. Barry Bonds is the all-time leader in home runs. He's the all-time leader in walks. He led the league in every statistical category a million times. If you turned, I saw someone tweet this yesterday. If you turned every one of his 762 career home runs into an out, he would still have better career numbers than David Ortiz in terms of on-base percentage. He got walked with the bases loaded intentionally. That's how good this guy was. Nobody has ever had a peak like Barry Bonds had a peak. And I think also the steroid conversation neglects that, hey, before there were all these accusations of him juicing and stuff, he was still maybe the best player in baseball. He was a 40-40 guy. He was incredible even when he was tiny and just on the come up in his 20s with the Pirates. So this is – are you preserving history? No. You're basically taking the best player of all time and you're saying, hey, well, there's an uncomfortable history around that, so we're not going to preserve this guy at all. We're not going to preserve the steroid era. We're not going to preserve that our all-time home run leader isn't in the Hall of Fame. And, I mean, throw the honoring excellence part out of that. You're not, like, if that was the case, we would have just the best players in the Hall of Fame. But the preserving history part kills me. You're a museum.
Yep.
You're not, like you said, G, it's not the Hall of Chill Bros. It's the it's a museum.
It's not the Hall of Media Members That Were Nice to Me. Or players that were nice to the media members.
And for the better part of a decade, Barry Bonds was the most important player in baseball, the best player in baseball, and the biggest story around baseball. There were books written about him, not just for the steroid era, for how incredible he was. Like, Game of Shadows has a lot to do with, you know, Balco and credible accusations against Bonds. It's also a book about how, yeah, this guy is the best baseball player of all time, and even without steroids, that might have ended up being true. It's just such a joke. Your mission statement is preserving history, honoring excellence, and you just wiped out, from my mind, I mean, you could say you wiped out Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. You could say you wiped out that era of baseball.
Yeah.
It's just a joke entirely now.
It
like,
is.
Nobody in there, they're, like, it doesn't mean nearly as much anymore.
I know.
You left the all-time home run leader and probably the best hit position player of all time out of the Hall of Fame. It's a joke.
Blake, you touched on, first of all, I love this version of you. Like, this fired up, angry Blake. Like, you know, usually
don't mess
this,
with my stats.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. But you nailed it, kid. You nailed it. And it's so true. And it's just, they diminished the accomplishments of other guys in the Baseball Hall of Fame in doing this. Like, that's what they did. They did this. And if Rob Manfred had half a brain, if this museum had half a brain, they would publicly come out and chastise these idiot sports writers who have taken a responsibility that was given to them in good faith and turned it into something that is about them, something that is about their personal weirdness. And I don't care, baseball writers, like, I don't care if you're listening to this. I don't care if you tag somebody in this. I really don't give a crap. Because anybody that did that, it was a pure 100% ego play. And I got some tweets even yesterday, people going, like, one guy's like, so cheating is okay. Blake said it. These are not the first athletes to cheat. Like, they're not. They're not the first. They're not the last. You're allowed to have complicated conversations with people. These guys do not owe you some sort of, oh, well, they're going to also be the greatest people of all time. I know we've confused this at times, but it's just not a reality. It's so infuriating watching this happen again. Watching this happen where now, like, if you're my age, if you're Blake and I's age, you probably at some point in your life had San Francisco Giants gear. You probably had a t-shirt or a jacket or a cap or a fanny pack or something San Francisco Giants related because of Barry Bonds. They were the Golden State Warriors to baseball because of Barry Bonds. They weren't even winning World Series. They just had Barry Bonds. Baseball is not a national sport. It hasn't been for a long time. And for a real moment, baseball was a national sport with Barry Bonds. And, like, to just ignore that and its place in the game because he wasn't nice to reporters, which is exactly why he didn't go in. Like, the guy is arguably one of the most famous things about him, even in his baseball career, was how awful he was to sports writers and what an awful guy he was. Like, It's just so transparent. It's so obvious. It's so painful. And it's so hypocritical. It's just, yeah, it's damaging. You damage the game. You damage the game, baseball writers.
The breaking the rules and cheating part, too, like, sure, we know taking performance enhancers is bad and unfair, whatever. You know when the MLB introduced their PED policy?
Yeah, of course, I
know. 18 years into Barry Bonds' career.
Yeah.
Before, so let's say he was doing it the whole time. It was only against the rules. Voice squeaking. This is how fired up I am.
Yeah. I love it.
It was only technically against the rules and against Major League Baseball's policy for the last four of his 22-year career. Before that came into place, he already had 658 home runs and 500 stolen bases.
Yeah.
And six MVP awards.
No, there's nothing. There's nothing.
You could have kicked him out of the league at the moment that you brought that in, and he would still be probably the best baseball position player of all time.
So isn't there this, like, December vote and it where they can – what is this? Like, they get another chance in December. There's something in December that I saw where they can get a different type of vote in. What is that, Blake?
Well, yeah, you can still – so they fall off the ballot. There are still other ways in. There's, like, I forget the term they use, but it's basically, like, a legacy committee that tries to correct these kind of errors.
They got to do it.
It's the same group of guys. It's
why would they be the same guys? What is this system?
Yeah, so there's a 16-person vote. They're called the Today's Game Committee.
Mm-hmm.
And it's members of the National Baseball Hall of Fame, executives, and veteran media members.
How do we get you on there?
And you got to go 12 of 16 on the vote. So the people, the 16 voters are the people who already voted to not have Bonds in, and the people who unilaterally changed the rules in 2014, basically to keep Bonds out.
I can't believe we have writers who wrote things like, I just couldn't do it, in regards to arguably the greatest baseball player who ever lived. I just couldn't do it.
Writers think that they're not going to, like, get into heaven because they voted?
No.
Like, what do they think the stakes are? I don't get it.
It's
just awful.
It's not... Blake summarized it. This is a league that has cheaters in the hall, like guys who skirted the rules. We've done this, like, this is the thing. If you're paying close attention to this and you're not just zooming it out, the way it's been framed to the public is, should you let these two guys who are the first two cheaters who ever cheated into the game, whose numbers, like, this is the framework of it, actually. It's even worse. They go, baseball is a game of numbers. And these two destroyed the entire history of the game. That their numbers distorted everything. And guess what? Hank Aaron is one of the most popular baseball players who's ever lived. And someone that the game loved. And Barry Bonds came and was a face that they didn't like. And he smashed his record. And they found a way to just completely discredit it. And they didn't want to even acknowledge it. They want Hank Aaron to be the home run king. They don't want it to be Barry Bonds. And so they framed it as, guys have come along and tarnished all the numbers of our league, and now we'll never be able to know how to compare someone from the early 1900s to the early 2020s. And that is supposed to be the beauty of baseball, right? And ignoring every reality of the situation that Blake outlined earlier in the show. Like, they've just decided that everything, every other piece of context, every single one of these guys seen Ken Burns baseball, and they're like, nah, to any of this information that we're going to take in here. They all love Ken Burns, but they're not going to listen to anything from any of that, right? Like, it's selective listening. It's nothing more than that. It is 100%. In the case of every single one of these baseball writers that did not vote for Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens, it is ego. You see it all the time. You saw it with our buddy in Edmonton, Jim Matheson. Sports writers can be that. They can be, I'm bigger than the game. I am the caretaker of the game. I am the record holder of the game. I am the journalist who has the unbiased opinion, and I will make sure that the game is preserved in the way that I see fit. And they completely lose touch with reality. They completely lose touch with just what Blake said. Like, you can blow a mission statement. Like, it's right there in front of you. Hey, what is your directive? That? Do that. Do that thing. It's a baseball museum. Yeah, idiot. You can't even grab, your ego won't let you see through the like simplest of things. The simplest of things. It's embarrassing. And again, you ruined it for everyone, and you ruined it for players that are in the hall. I don't even know what to do. They gotta change it. Like, that's the only way the Baseball Hall of Fame can now survive, is if they just completely rejigger the rules and go, we're changing this up. We're getting rid of some of these writers. We don't know what the hell we're doing here. This is bad. We got to have some type of emergency clause to get them into the baseball museum. And I don't even like Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. I didn't like either player. Like, it's just outrageous. It's outrageous. It's outrageous. It's outrageous. Let's take a break. Let's try to be a little happier this morning. Let's just.
A-list, we need you, kid.
I got to go find some good feel-good stories.
No, actually, do it. All right. Maybe it'll be a negative A-list day. That's my favorite one. So that's next, the A-list. J.D. Bunkus, Blake Murphy, A-list 4-Fire, Sports F5, Night of the Fan.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sports F5, Night of the Fan. It's Barry Bonds, Kanye West. Listen to that today. Crank it. Blast it. There's going to be no Hall of Fame talk in my A-list, but JD and Blake's rants are A-list worthy, I will say, today. So shout out to you guys.
A-list, this is how confident I am that Blake and I are right. Like, here's the thing, is like, I don't even, it's, you can fire texts away all day today, 590-590. you can reach us in the DMs at JD Bunkus, at E. Blake Murphy. Blake Murphy, Twitter or Instagram. I will promise you this. There will be nothing you can say that is going to not get completely slam dunked on and put onto the moon. Like, it's a Barry Bonds down the middle, in the middle of his steroid juice in mind, down the plate, that isn't going to make me smash this over the, like, out of the moon, out of the ballpark. If you don't get it at this point, you never will, and I feel sorry for you that you cannot understand what a museum is. Like, that's the, your basic fundamental misunderstanding of a museum is, like, you're coming from such a difficult place in a position to even discuss this. It's hard to do it to you, but send them away, and I will smash it. I will smash it. I will smash your stupid, stupid, stupid arguments. Like, it doesn't matter. You can disagree all you want, texters or Twitter. Like, you're wrong. You're straight up wrong. And guess what? The majority of baseball writers don't even agree with you. It's like they have a rule where it's a certain amount that even gets it in. Like, the majority of baseball writers don't even agree with you. The same group that I think is dumb. that's them. So good luck. Good luck with your hollow cobbled together pieces in the morning. I got time for you.
All right. Well, we don't have much time, so let's get right into the A-list.
Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
Should we keep the vibes just the same type of energy? Because I got a couple options.
This is all you.
I know the answer. Okay. This is just an awful story. If we're talking about people we don't like, how about these two basketball broadcasters in Maine? So these two guys are broadcasting high school basketball, a junior girls varsity basketball game for the local radio station. And this is what they said on air. Quote, two girls out here, extremely overweight. Awful. How come you don't get uniforms that fit the girls? While they're laughing and ripping on these two high school basketball girls, little junior varsity, tiny, like, little baby girls. And that's what they're saying. Obviously, they caught wind online. People were tweeting in. They were fired. But in today's things we don't like to hear, to see, people we want to rip on, those two clowns. All right.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Ridiculous. I mean, yeah, this one's straightforward.
Straightforward. You suck. Move on. Yeah. You are the worst. Okay. Here's something that is maybe a good baseball type story for you. The Frontier League, ever heard of them? Announced that they'll be trying something called sudden death baseball. So what will happen is, if after one extra inning in a tied game, the home team will choose to hit or pitch. The hitting team puts a runner on first, three outs, run scores, hitting team wins. No runs, pitching team wins. So I know we talked about changing the NFL rules potentially for overtime. We had a lot of texting about it, but I wanted to get your guys' takes on sudden death baseball.
They should not call it the Frontier League. They should call it the Bush League. Like, it's just, obviously that's Bush League. It's like baseball. I'm sorry. Baseball is one where I love it in the regular season that they've done the put the runner on second thing because it expedites games. There's 162 of these things. And sometimes when this stuff happens, people forget that that is the case. Like, it's the same thing with getting back to the football one. With the extra 15 minutes is you go, well, what happens with if there's a tie at the end of the extra 15 minutes? Football is not a sport that's meant to be played for six quarters. And it's too dangerous to do that. And that's how I feel about baseball, where you go, man, playing extra innings in a 162-game season, when you get into the way that it used to be some of these times, you know, getting into 15, 16, it's outrageous. It's just too much of a tax on players, fans, television, everybody. So I don't mind it from that standpoint. I actually don't. I don't think it's like the worst idea. I think it's kind of fun for a league that obviously is just like I've never heard of the Frontier League. I don't know what it is, but yeah, whatever. I'm down with changing the rules up like that. By the way, that baseball rule though made me realize that it truly is the easiest way to do it is to have the team that wins the coin toss gets to just simply determine which time they touch the ball. Either they can go first or they can go second, but both teams get at least one shot. So maybe the advantage is if you believe that there is an advantage going second, then you can decide to take it, but that both teams touch the football. I actually think, like, last night as soon as we got off the show, I thought that's the 100% the rule. Like, that's the way that you gotta, like, I don't know why that's just not it. Just do it that way. Both teams are definitely gonna touch the ball, but the team that wins the coin toss ends up touching it first, can decide where they want to touch it.
Blake, anything? Are you in or not?
No, no. I mean, it's cool to try different stuff. It's always great. I like that leagues like MLB and NBA use their minor leagues or independent leagues to try some stuff, but I don't think this one sticks.
Okay, last one. Pick a side in this social media feud. I know you don't like this person to begin with, but Patrick Mahomes' wife, okay?
No, she's
you know, obviously we're going to try to be I'm going to present the evidence, you choose a side. But yeah, we know much about her. So afterwards, after the game, after the Chiefs won, she's up in a press box. She opens the press box glass and starts pouring champagne on the people below her in 0-degree weather without them wanting the champagne poured on them, etc. She gets a lot of public backlash. People are furious. You can see the individuals in the video turning around, looking at her. They're getting drenched with champagne. She then tweets, "I wish I could do whatever I want and not get criticized for it." And she's playing the victim that, oh my God, I can't believe people are mad about this. Where do you fall in the debate? Are you on Team Mahomes or Team people in the stands getting soaked with champagne in 0 degrees weather?
I'll tell you this. Blake, you want to go ahead? You want to go first?
I guess no, it's all you, man.
On this.
It's all you.
This is another case of where people have already made up their minds about the person, and so they're criticizing them for what they are already perceived as. Jackson Mahomes, the brother of Patrick, and his wife are unpopular figures on social media among sports fans, right? Sports fans do not identify with them. They don't like them. They find them to be grating, both of them. I think in Jackson's case, it's a little bit more justified after, you know, he danced on Sean Taylor's number this year, a clearly roped off number that was meant to honor a dead football player. I thought that was a bit of a poor choice, but really these are just two people who are annoying and people don't like them. And so they are blowing them up. But no, she does not deserve the hate that she got on social media. It's outrageous. For what? Like popping a bottle of champagne when a sports team won in overtime? Like, are you out of your minds? Like, of course, that the way that it's positioned is like, and the poor people below were drenched in the freezing cold and they all caught hypothermia and limped out of there. It's like, have you ever been around a champagne bottle? It's like, it's like that. Those people didn't get drenched. They probably got one light little touch of champagne. And if that is Giselle, right? If that's Giselle mm-hmm. who pops the champagne, people are going, oh my God, Giselle popped champagne.
It's we so love cool. Giselle.
We love Giselle. She's up there. But instead it gets turned into this whole like, oh, she is the upper class and they are just the bourgeoisie trying to leave the stadium and they have been soaked by this empress who doesn't even think about them. She's just having fun. She watched her husband win. Just because you don't like her doesn't mean that you should go on social media and absolutely light her on fire. It's awful. I stand with Mrs. Mahomes, who I actually normally find grating as well, but this is a case where it's just like completely outrageous. It's so stupid. Stop trying to pretend like, by the way, internet, like you're all bullies. Like you are. So many of you people that do this, if you participated in this in any way, like you just love being a part of the mob. And it's just like you're not looking at it rationally whatsoever. Look what she did. She did nothing. She did less than nothing. And people are mad. Like
she was getting like death threats for doing
exactly.
this, by the
embarrassing.
Way.
Like the, truly the amount embarrassing.
Of, yeah. The amount of feedback was
the
awful.
Mob. The mob.
Also, if you didn't already have some beer soaked on you at the end of that game, at a football game you're live at, come on.
No kidding. No kidding. No kidding. Yeah. So, yeah, maybe just look yourself in the mirror a little bit and ask yourself why you hate her so much.
Well, we're going to listen to someone after the break who is kind and lovely, and
we're
going to
say who we also
know that we love, and we'll change
the elite who would pour.
He would never
on the
do that. Who will change the vibes of our 6 a.m. show? Jeff
people
Merrick
acted like she had like a fire hose, you know, and just like,
yeah, like acid,
it was like a prison, you know, like she was just yeah, exactly, like she just dumped acid on the. You're like, oh, did you see what? Well, I don't even know what her Mrs. Mahomes' name.
Brittany.
Brittany, yeah, that's Brittany, right? It's like poor girl. I'm sorry, Brittany.
Right.
That sucks.
So,